This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
This woman had at least 8 false identities.
This is Cold War Conversations. If you're new here, you've come to the right place to listen to first-hand Cold War history accounts. Do make sure you follow us in your podcast app or join our emailing list at coldwarconversations.com. There's an area near Bergen, Norway, known as the Ice Dale or the Ice Valley. It's also nicknamed Death Valley, due to the area's history of suicides in the Middle Ages, and more recently, hiking accidents. In November 1970, a man and his two young daughters noted an unusual burning smell, and to their horror, discovered the charred body of a woman located among some scree. Now, if this podcast was a magazine, you wouldn't mind paying a few quid or dollars a month. So I'm asking you to support us for the bargain price of $3 a month. In the last few weeks, Pete Hobson, Richard Goyette, Hamish McIntyre, Alastair Bassett, David Roberts, James Marks and Richard Harvey have joined in helping to cover the show's increasing costs and keep us on the air. Plus, they've got that sought-after Cold War Conversations coaster to look forward to too. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate for extra information. So back to today's episode. We speak with Marit Heigraf, an investigative reporter for the Norwegian broadcaster NRK, who has investigated this case and is the co-presenter of the Death in Ice Valley podcast. We welcome Marit to our Cold War conversation. I've been intrigued by the Death in Ice Valley podcast, and I'm sure my listeners will be as well, because it's a Cold War mystery, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, actually. The story is about a woman found dead in a remote valley in Norway in 1970. And the mysterious thing about this lady is that the police didn't manage to find anything out about her identity. The labels had been removed from her clothes and scratched from her items. And still today, almost 50 years later, nobody knows who she was.
And how did you first hear about the story?
Well, the story has been, every now and then, it has been in the newspapers here in Norway as an unsolved mystery, but not very much for the last decades, let me say it that way. But we started as investigative journalists here in my organization, NRK, Norwegian Public Broadcasting. We started out a couple of years ago wanting to solve this mystery, wanting to see how far can we get in solving this true crime case now, 50 years later.
And why did you think we'd get further nowadays? I mean, I guess it's more, obviously there's been technological advancements, but how did you think you'd be able to move the case further forward?
Well, that's it. With modern forensic science and modern technical methods, you can do much more now than the police were able to do back in 1970. So we wanted to give it a try to see what we could achieve with combining investigative traditional investigative journalism with modern forensic methods.
And it's amazing how the story appears to have resonated with people in the present day. I mean, your Facebook group is huge, and there's loads of people doing their own investigations or coming up with theories there as well.
Yeah, it's quite amazing, actually. The listeners' involvement in this story and the listeners' attempts to try to help us with our investigation in the Facebook group and by writing us emails, and so it's amazing. It has really moved people around the globe, actually, this mystery.
Absolutely. I think it's a sad story as well, because nobody seems to have missed her. Doesn't appear to be any family looking for her, and it's tragic that nobody's sort of come looking for her.
Till now, it seems that nobody missed her, as you say, or at least hasn't come forward to say something about it. We have had a lot of tips coming in over the last year after launching our podcast series. It's such a strange case. It's such a sad story and a very, very mysterious story, because there are so many clues and angles all around this case that makes it, yeah, like you say, a Cold War story in a way. Because what we do know, we don't know much about the woman. We know more now than we knew before starting up our investigation. What we do know for sure is that she wasn't a Norwegian. She died under very strange and sad circumstances in Norway, but she was for sure not Norwegian. So that's why we try to reach out there to that person or those persons who might know something, who might recognize something about this woman that leads them to think, well, this could have been my aunt or late neighbor.
Yeah, yeah. So if we just elaborate a bit more on the circumstances here, because she's discovered, her body is discovered in a remote valley outside of Bergen, and it appears as though she has died from falling on a fire. But the autopsy finds that there was carbon monoxide poisoning and a large number of sleeping pills as well. And there's this sort of ceremonial aspect of some of her belongings being laid out alongside her. But the police conclusions appear to be around suicide rather than a murder. Mm. What are your sort of views on that?
Well, I don't want to give away too much for those of you who wants to listen to the podcast about our findings. But there were some very strange circumstances around her death. And the police managed to find out quite a few things about her and her pattern of traveling, let me put it that way, that made it even more strange. Who was this woman? What was she doing in Norway? Why was she traveling that much? And what was her mission? Let me put it that way. And we're talking about the time here, 1970. We're in the middle, in the depth of the Cold War. And we know that Norway was for sure very interesting for several foreign intelligence services. And there were speculations back then, and still are speculations, that this was a woman with a certain task in Norway, and that she, for some reason, died up in that valley. My personal opinions doesn't matter that much. I try to work. I know this is boring to listen to, but I really honestly try to work as objective as possible, because as a journalist, I think that is the only way to attack such a case. But of course, I'm a human being as well, and I have worked this case for such a long time and in such depth that, of course, I have a lot of thoughts. And the circumstances around that the police concludes with suicide and that nothing indicates that she was a spy. Well, those conclusions came after only 3 weeks investigation. And that was for sure a very strange conclusion.
Yes. Yeah, because the whole sort of espionage link is, you know, an interesting one. And I know my listeners are, you know, when I put on an episode which is Cold War espionage, it does tend to be more popular than some of my other eclectic episodes. And this does have the sort of feel of there's an element of secrecy here in terms of her activities and the way that she, you know, the contents of her suitcases and various bits of paperwork that come up as well, that sort of lend themselves to this isn't a straightforward case. There's something odd going on here.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, all of it, all the clues and leads points to that she had some sort of mission. And again, we're talking about 1970 here. And Norway as an interesting country with the border to Russia and as a NATO member. And there were witness observations of her near the test site of the so-called Penguin missiles in Norway at the time. So everything in the case actually.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Points to that she was on some kind of a mission. For whom? We don't know. But of course, I mean, it is, as a lot of listeners have been pointing out, it is. There are other possibilities. Was she just a lonely woman flying from something or some sort of mental illness involved? Everything is possible, but yeah, the main leads definitely points to a connection with the Cold War going on, yes.
And as an objective journalist, you're ruling nothing out and ruling nothing in, which is just what I would expect. I mean, it's interesting because listening to the podcast, you do talk to various espionage experts, and there are some question marks around some of her behavior as to whether that would be something that an agent would do, because she does come across, certainly from the eyewitness accounts, as being quite conspicuous in terms of her activities, I think.
Mm. Yeah, we speak in the podcast, we speak with several sources, a former KGBI agent, an expert historian of the Cold War period, and the experts point us in different directions, actually. Some say, well, it wasn't normal for an agent to have several identities because this woman had at least 8 false identities. Other again say, well, there were agents having several false identities. But of course, there are so much in between. She was maybe not an agent, but she could have been a courier. And then that would explain some of her behavior and travel pattern.
Yeah. Did you feel that you were being blocked in any way, particularly when you went down the espionage angle, in terms of getting information from official sources, even though it was such a long time ago?
No, we haven't been blocked. as a matter of fact, the reason that we could go into this investigation and sort of reopen it as journalists was the access to the archives, the access to the files, the police work from 1970. We got a total access from the Norwegian police, or better say from the state's archive, because the case is so old. So the case is now in the state's archive. So we have been able to read up on everything that is accessible to us. But, and we have been to a lot of different archives in our search for the truth here. What is not available to us is the intelligence archives here in Norway. I would have loved to have a look in there to see if there's a file on the Easter woman.
And so your inquiries there, do they say there's no file or that you can't have access to it?
Oh, well, their answer is as the normal answer from most intelligence services.
We can't confirm or deny.
You're right. Yeah.
Right. Right. And it's safe to say that Norway was sort of, you know, it was in the front line of the Cold War, having a border with the Soviet Union mm-hmm. at the time. And there were various other incidents in Norway that were a bit strange in terms of people dying suddenly and things like that. I know there were other things going on as well with Mossad operating in, mm-hmm. in Norway as well, where they killed somebody in error who I mm-hmm. think they thought was part of the Munich Olympics right. attack. But there are other sort of, you know, oddities in Norway's Cold War history that indicate that this perhaps isn't just an isolated case.
Yeah, we have been looking into, you're right, there were several strange deaths of foreigners in Norway around the time, around 1970. We have been looking into some of the others, and there seems to be a reasonable explanation for those. They are not that mysterious as this one, the Easter woman case. It's totally different in all the mysterious clues around yeah. it. And then you have, it's right, as you said, you have the Lillehammer case. Ahmet Butiki was a man who was accidentally killed by Mossad agents in Norway, in Lillehammer. 1973, and they were caught, the agents from Mossad back then, so it was quite a story actually here in Norway. And yeah, there was a couple of things going on in Norway around the time.
Interesting stuff. I mean, you know, as I said before, you spoke to some intelligence people. How did you feel that you were getting the absolute truth out of them, or did you feel that sometimes they were just hiding some of the story there?
Well, let me put it that way. We have a lot of sources, and we have been speaking to a lot more sources, also intelligence people, than we bring in the podcast, because not all of them are willing to give an open interview. They are not the easiest sources to work with, the people who really knows what's going on behind closed doors. But we have some good sources. We are working on in different directions still to see if we can get somewhere near the truth around this woman. Could she have been working for any kind of intelligence service in 1970?
Right, right. You're tantalizing me there. Now, as far as trying to identify her, I mean, there was nothing within her belongings that allowed easy identification, it's safe to say. In fact, there were, you know, active measures to obscure any identification in her belongings. But I can, you know, see from the research that you've done, you've got some sort of indication as to the area that she might have certainly grown up in or had her formative years.
Yeah, whether she did it or somebody else did it, somebody did quite a good job in hiding her identity, because even when the police, a couple of days after finding the body, they managed to find her suitcases stored at the train station in Bergen, and two suitcases containing a lot of clothes, a lot of, yeah, let me put it that way, mysterious stuff like glasses without a correction in the lens, a code note, things like that, but nothing that indicated who this woman actually was. And that it was a thorough job, we know that now, because almost 50 years later, we still haven't managed to find her identity. But we try to attack the case with modern forensic science to see whether we can narrow down the area. Like I said, we know this wasn't a Norwegian. We know this was a foreigner. But we have been trying to work with modern forensic science to narrow down the area she possibly came from. And we have succeeded. The world is big, but her world is smaller now. So we have narrowed down the area she could have grown up, but it's still a huge area to search for us.
Yeah, yeah. Interestingly, you know, listening to the podcast, you talk to a number of eyewitnesses who, you know, worked in the hotels that she stayed at and, you know, were able to give what I found incredibly quite vivid descriptions, even though it was, you know, 30 years ago. And I'm not, you know, trying to say that they're not giving you an accurate account, but how did you determine whether an eyewitness account was credible or not?
Well, that is another difficult thing for us. The time is not working for us. It's against us. I mean, almost 50 years has passed. So when starting up the work with this investigation, we started out by going through all witnesses, all police people working on the case and so on. And
hi, this is Rhonda in Virginia, and I support Cold War Conversations because I think the work that Ian is doing is critically important. I think it's vital to record the firsthand accounts of people who lived and experienced the Cold War because it illustrates history in a way that a book never can. So thank you so much for the podcast. It's my favorite podcast, and I look forward to it every week.
To be like Rhonda and help to preserve these incredible stories of the Cold War, as a monthly or annual supporter, you'll be able to listen ad-free, you'll become one of our community, get the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster as a thank you, and you'll bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate to find out more.
To track them down, where are they? And are they still alive? And unfortunately, of course, I mean, most police people working with this was a huge investigation for the Bergen police, and most of the people working with it was senior officers back then, meaning they are very old now or they're dead. So, and that the same goes for the hotel witnesses. Some of them were younger, and that's the reason why they are still alive. So there weren't too many people to choose from. So I have been through most of the people still alive. I've interviewed most of them, spoken with most of them. And then, as you say, almost 50 years has passed, and we know that witness descriptions are being colored from different things, from time passing by, decades passing by, from what they've been reading in newspapers and hearing in television about the case. And so on, but still we also have their fresh descriptions from back then, that they're written down interrogations by the police, so we can compare. And I think the witnesses give us quite a good description about this woman. And yeah, I think you can trust at least parts of it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I found it interesting because she was in a shop and trying to buy some boots. There's quite an interesting description there. And as I said, they're quite vivid. You know, it's not just what she looked like. It's also, you know, the smells around as well, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's very interesting. What we bring in the podcast is this shoe shop guy. He sold her a pair of rubber boots in Stavanger in 1970. And he's telling about the smell. He definitely remembers that he is a polite guy, so he has problems saying this, but that he says she didn't smell good.
Mm.
And he didn't recognize the smell back then. Also, his colleague in the shoe shop could remember this smell, and both of them are saying, we couldn't recognize it back then. It was 1970. We didn't know what is this smell. But later on, we learned about garlic, and we think it was the smell of garlic. And some of our listeners have been discussing that, and, well, could they know? Was it garlic? They couldn't know. They couldn't possibly know, because garlic wasn't in Norway. It wasn't known in 1970. It wasn't a normal thing in our cuisine. But I can tell you and your listeners now that he or those people in the shoe shop weren't the only one pointing out the bad smell of garlic from this woman. There were several witnesses actually pointing that out. And that's a very interesting and accurate observation.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I was reading that someone is making a spy thriller TV series about the story. Do you know much about that?
Not more than you, I guess. The interest around this case has grown and become huge all over the world through this last year after we launched the podcast. So I am being interviewed a lot from different medias in different countries.
And you mean this isn't an exclusive, Merit? Oh, no.
It's not the first, no. And people want to, articles have been written, and people want to write books, and they want to make television series and so on. And I can understand that. It's a really fascinating, tragic, and mysterious story.
Yeah. Yeah. But I, you know, the way that you do the podcast is incredible. And I know it's not just you, it's you and Neil, and you know, the music and the immersiveness of the podcast is fantastic. It does feel as though you are there, and even in my head now I can hear that rain falling on the leaves that you have there. And it is very atmospheric. So for anybody who's not listened to Death in Ice Valley, I recommend you search it out and give it a listen. It is a really interesting story, and it's told really well, and the mystery isn't over yet. So Merit, what's next for Death in Ice Valley? Have you made any more progress since the last episode?
First of all, thank you very much. I'm really glad you liked it. And yeah, to tell the listeners, it's a collaboration between NRK, Norwegian Broadcasting, and BBC World Service. And I am making this podcast together with my colleague Neil McCarthy from the BBC. And we are still working on the case, definitely. We are now in a research mode, and we're trying to get closer still to the truth. And if and when we manage to find out more about this woman, we will for sure come back with new episode on Death in Ice Valley. We try to, our way to go on with this investigation is to work on the identity question, because there are a lot of open questions. Who was she? What was she doing in Norway? Who was she working for? What was her mission? Was she a spy? And we think that the answer to the questions begins with the identity. First of all, we have to try to find her identity, because then we can maybe manage to find the other answers.
Right, right. So how can Cold War Conversations listeners help you with the mystery of the Icedale woman?
Well, if somebody out there has something they think might be relevant to me, please write me an email or contact us through the Facebook group. Yes, you're welcome to, very much so. My email is my name, merit.heigraf@nrk.no.
Right, right. Well, it would be great if it's a Cold War Conversations listener that gives you the big break, but I'm afraid I can't promise that for you. Our listeners will certainly be intrigued by this Cold War story. Before we finish up, there's another case in this time in Oslo, the Oslo Plaza case in 1995, which has some similarities. The main similarity is the lack of identification and the effort to hide identification. There is that a possible another NRK BBC collaboration there?
Well, I don't know about that. You're right. There are some similarities. Also, that both of those women actually said they were from Belgium, because our woman on her hotel cards, she had to fill them out, yes, and she said she was a Belgian, and that so did the Oslo Plaza woman as well. Well, I think there are some similarities, but I think the biggest difference is the time difference. I mean, 1970 to 1995. I don't think there are anything that connects the two stories. And I think I have to concentrate about the Easter woman first, at least.
Got your hands full with that one.
I sure do.
Well, Marie, it's been a real pleasure speaking to you about this case. Obviously, wish you every success. But if people want to stay posted on this, Death in Ice Valley Facebook page is probably a good place to sign up to. But as I said before, do download the Death in Ice Valley podcast. It is really well produced, far better than my feeble efforts, and it's a great listen. I was riveted to it. So do download that. Marit, thank you for taking some time out of your day to talk to us. I really appreciate it, and I really hope we can be of some help to you.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Well, I hope that's whetted your appetite to explore the Death in Ice Valley podcast. I can highly recommend it. There's further information on this episode in our show notes, which can also be found as a link in your podcast app. If you like what you're hearing, please leave reviews in Apple Podcasts and share us on social media. Don't forget to tag us as well. If you can't wait for next week's episode, do visit our Facebook discussion group where guests and listeners continue the Cold War conversation. Just search for Cold War Conversations in Facebook. Thank you very much for listening. It is really appreciated. Goodbye. not enjoying the ads? Well, you can avoid them by going to coldwarconversations.com/donate. By becoming a monthly or annual supporter, you'll enjoy ad-free listening, become a part of our community, receive the sought-after Cold War Conversations drinks coaster, and bask in the warm glow of knowing that you're helping to preserve Cold War history. Just go to coldwarconversations.com/donate for more information.